I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday afternoon. The mixed verdict in the Michael Dunn murder trial has reignited debate on Florida's Stand Your Ground laws. Dunn insisted he was legally justified under current law to fire 10 shots into the car where Jordan Davis and his friends were listening to music. Would this lethal confrontation have happened without the law? If Florida had not passed its law so that a person has no duty to retreat before using lethal force, would this have happened? What about George Zimmerman? Would he have followed Trayvon Martin with a gun and confronted him? The Journal for Human Resources recently published a study of homicide rates in states that passed these laws between 2000 and 2010. It was conducted by an economist with Texas A&M University, and it compared those to other states over the same period. Homicide rates in states with a version of Stand Your Ground increased by an average of 8% over states without it, which means 600 more homicides per year. Joining us this year, Our is the legal and policy director for Dream Defenders. Ahmad Abouznaid is with us, and he is that organization is one that we have spoken with before. They were formed in the wake of Trayvon Martin's death, and they initiated a 31-day occupation of the Capitol building in Tallahassee to pressure members of the Florida House of Representatives to hold a legislative hearing on Stand Your Ground. We talked with several of the people who were occupying the State House at that time. We'll be welcoming phone calls. This remains a difficult issue in this country, not only in Florida, but in other states that have Stand Your Ground. Our guest has testified before the United Nations, making this an international issue as well. Here's how you reach us, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org, and our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, if you'd like to leave a message there. We're also on Twitter at K Dunn Show. Ahmad, thank you very much for being with us.
All right, thank you, Kathleen.
Would you like to first respond, because this case has been much in the news the last week, to the shooting of Jordan Davis and the Michael Dunn verdict?
Sure. I'd first and foremost like to say that our thoughts and prayers are, as always, with the family of Jordan Davis, Trayvon Martin, and really all those in Florida who have been affected by Stand Your Ground and the increased use of justifiable violence and homicide. The verdict let us know, again, that we have so much work to do in the state of Florida, where, you know, we are in such a rush to attempt to say we are in a post-racial society and that our criminal justice system is perfect. But the realities on the ground bear a different message. And the facts of the matter are that we continue to work within an imperfect system that disproportionately affects people of color. And Stand Your Ground laws, via its existence within this system, tends to make the rest of us a lot less safe and a lot less comfortable. And I think the decisions that we've seen recently in Florida have reiterated that.
Mm-hmm. What was the outcome of your 31-day sit-in in the Florida State Legislative Halls?
I think the main outcome was that the state of Florida leadership, the elected leadership, as well as national political leadership, began to take notice of the fact that young people, and specifically young people of color, were fed up with the way the issues were being dealt with the lack of responsiveness and critical thinking required to solve these issues that we're plagued with in our communities today. And I think we proved to them, first and foremost, that we were here and we cared about these issues, but secondly, we were going to do something about it, and hopefully we're inspiring youth all across the country to do the same.
Is the Florida legislature any more likely to reconsider the Stand Your Ground law in your state?
I think that's going to be a continued battle. I think there's a amendment being proposed by Senator Chris Smith to accomplish some of the things we'd like to accomplish with the way Stand Your Ground is currently written, but it's not going to address all of the issues. But then there's also a movement within the Florida legislature to expand Stand Your Ground type laws and to provide added protection for those seeking it. And so I think for us, this will be a long-term battle in Florida, and I think it might necessitate a bit of a reformation of the Florida legislature in order to accomplish it. I think, you know, some of the legislators that we have at this current time seem to be dug into their positions and aren't willing to listen to the concerns of the state and to the people of the state. And so, therefore, their time may be up soon in those leadership positions.
In October of last year, you and the NAACP and Florida Legal Services appeared before the 109th session of the UN Human Rights Committee talking about Stand Your Ground. Why did you bring this case to the UN?
Yeah, actually, thank you, Kathleen. The hearing actually was postponed until this March, and so we'll be going in about 3 weeks to Geneva to present as a part of a large contingent of civil society groups discussing issues that plague their nations and the government's ability to deal with those violations of the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. So our government has signed on to protect certain rights and privileges for all of its citizens, including its minorities. And so we thought that Stand Your Ground had a place at this forum because the very right to life of minorities, people of color, and those being attacked by Stand Your Ground is up for, you know, up to be had here. And we need to fight for the right to life, which it seems that for some, you know, maybe something that has already been established and gained, but that is not the reality for many of us in Florida, and I think those cases have just... So appealing to the United Nations Human Rights Committee on the disproportionate effects of Stand Your Ground laws and how they increase violence and justifiable homicide in our communities and contribute to a less safe environment. Those things are all important to highlight to the United Nations so people understand that we're fighting for rights and justice and equality here in the United States, and everything is not as peachy as some would have us believe.
And what are the disproportionate effects on people of color of Stand Your Ground?
Sure. So from one aspect, you know, we see what happened in these trials, and it's the fact that, you know, via the criminal justice system, which inherently is biased against people of color via its jury selection, via the system as a whole, and the lack of fundamental participation of people of color, we tend to find ourselves in a minority position within the criminal justice system. And so Stand Your Ground laws, when you're looking at a juror, looking at a black male losing his life and a white defendant, that white defendant was that much more likely to receive the excuse of Stand Your Ground as opposed to if those sides had been turned around. So I think a apt statistic would show in the Tampa Bay Times that 59% of the cases where a black person utilized Stand Your Ground against a white person, the case was upheld. Stand Your Ground was granted. However, when a white person was utilizing a law against a black person, that number was 73%. And so, you know, these statistics, while to some may show a slight 13% difference, when you talk about the lives of everyday Floridians, it is a much more real and impactful statistic. And so we know that, you know, people of color not only are worried about the statistical effects, but really the societal effects of Stand Your Ground. So Michael Dunn and George Zimmerman both racially profiled Trayvon Martin and Jordan Davis. This is a fact in our assumption, and the fact that, you know, George Zimmerman did not see criminal behavior in Trayvon. He saw a young black man wearing a hoodie and felt a threat. And same with Michael Dunn, you know, he saw a group of black males with loud music at a gas station and felt threatened. And so the societal impact of these cases in Stand Your Ground on our young black men and women and people of color in general being viewed as threats continue to lead us to feel unsafe in this environment. So those are some of the primary effects that Stand Your Ground has on communities of color.
Ahmad, I believe Florida was the first state to pass a Stand Your Ground law back in 2005. There are now, 21 additional states that have adopted these statutes, but would you say that Florida is the toughest here, or how would you describe the Florida law compared to the others?
You know, actually, it's up to about 30 states right now.
Is it?
And there are some other states considering it. I think, you know, Florida is definitely one of the toughest because it's such a wide gap such a gray area there with your subjective feelings of fear and how they play a part in your ability to use lethal force or deadly force against a person. So I think, you know, Florida, if not the worst, is certainly one of the worst versions of stand your ground laws. And it's left us to a point where many jurors have said they're simply confused. They don't understand when you have the ability to defend yourself, when it is self-defense, and when you are acting as an aggressor, and that is via the confusion caused by stand your ground laws.
I believe that was what one of the jurors in the Michael Dunn case did say, that they didn't fully understand stand your ground. So there were several members of the jury who thought that he should be guilty of first-degree murder in the death of Jordan Davis, but they didn't understand the intricacies of stand your ground, so they didn't find him guilty.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing is, prior to stand your ground laws in 2005, when we had the common law self-defense, a person had the duty to safely retreat if possible. Now, proponents of stand your ground will have us believe that that meant, you know, you had to run and turn your back and, for instance, leave your family behind if someone attacked you. That is absolutely false. Prior to 2005, what we said was, in self-defense, you could defend yourself if you had no opportunity to safely retreat. If you had to stay and defend yourself, you could defend yourself. But if there was an opportunity to safely retreat and perhaps forego violence and keep the whole community safe, as opposed to one person safe, we would ask you to safely retreat. After 2005, stand your ground now, no one knows if you are supposed to ever retreat. In fact, we believe that based on how the law is currently written, you are encouraged to never retreat, and you are encouraged to be the aggressor and look for violence when, you know, prior to, we had encouraged a safe retreat in a peaceful way of solving things.
Mm-hmm. When you look at that case in Florida, you wonder why Michael Dunn didn't just move his car.
There's a lot of things, you know, to wonder about. You know, not only why didn't he move his car, but, you know, why did it bother him so, you know, that the youth were so, you know, loud. And, you know, it's not his gas station. It's not his property. You know, we're all people trying to coexist in this state, in this world at the same time. And, you know, he had no more privilege to live and be comfortable than they did. And I think that's, you know, the biggest thing to take home here is, you know, he felt, I believe, a certain part of privilege or a certain part of, I guess, right that they didn't have.
We welcome phone calls, and we'll take them momentarily. We're talking about Stand Your Ground, and our conversation today focused on this because of yet another sensational trial in Florida that reignited debate on Florida's Stand Your Ground laws. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Ahmad is legal and policy director for Dream Defenders. They're an activist group formed in the aftermath of the Trayvon Martin shooting, and they have been taking this issue of stand your ground and disproportionate effect on people of color and taking this as a civil rights issue to people all over this country. And as you heard him say, they will be in Geneva in 3 weeks before the United Nations talking about stand your ground laws. Dream Defenders, primarily young people, the organization of young people formed, and they conducted a sit-in for 31 days in Florida in the Capitol building. What do you think? Phone lines are jammed. We'll give you another way to reach us, 800-486-8655. You can also send an email, talk@wpr.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, Twitter @KDunnShow. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Stand Your Ground, this hour of the program. Ahmad Abuznaid is our guest. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Laura in Milwaukee is our first caller. Hi, Laura.
Hello.
Hi.
You know, my comment is, my son and I were talking about this. He's in college. He's taking psychological courses. How much you want to bet this? These laws are just giving people who are somewhat sociopathic or just angry at the world a license to kill.
Ahmad, what do you say?
I'm sorry. Please repeat that? I had a the
comment was
here.
She was talking with her son about this. Do these laws not give people who are unbalanced or sociopathic a reason to kill?
Oh, I would absolutely agree. And you know, obviously, I have no data to back that up, but I believe that all types of citizens, even those of us who just may be irrational for a moment or a bit emotional, are at added risk of committing some violent acts due to this law. And so, of course, I would think that those effects certainly apply to those with those types of mental illnesses.
Thank you, Laura, very much for your call. Let's go to Gary in Duluth. Hi, Gary.
Afternoon.
Hello.
Two things. I believe the main problem is not so much people of color, but people who are different, which is a form of xenophobia. When you have white people that go into black neighborhoods, my guess is they feel the same kind of nervousness that blacks feel going into white neighborhoods. The other thing is, and I think this is the main problem, is that in this culture, in the dysfunctional culture that we have, people learn to blame other people for how they feel. People learn to blame their fears on other people. And once you blame your fear on somebody else, then it becomes your right in their minds to try to change or affect or blow somebody away.
Come on.
Yeah, I would say that's a great point. Phobia and ignorance and misunderstanding of others certainly plays a huge part. And then I would absolutely agree that in general these types of messages are to not be tolerated. And then those fears being projected onto the rest of us, I think that is the scariest of facts about the situation, is that if we all have these prejudices and fears of others and we all start to act upon them, then sooner or later, none of us will be left.
Because we'll all feel that our lives are endangered if we're acting on our fears, and that's a substantial fear that a good portion of the population has. They'll act on it and they'll kill people.
Oh, absolutely. So-and-so's afraid of Muslims, and another person's afraid of Christians, and someone else is afraid of the poor, and another afraid of the rich. And then sooner or later, we'll all be standing our ground against each other with blood, soaking the streets.
Why do you think, I was amazed when you talked about the number of states that have stand your ground. Why has there been such a flurry of legislative action in so many states? Why are we embracing this?
Well, I think the NRA has a very resourceful and expensive lobby, and organizations like ALEC and NRA are certainly those organizations that a lot of times say they're fighting for the rights of people and for, our constitutional powers and rights within. However, sometimes they get beyond that, and the fact of the matter is, for the NRA, the more gun owners and the more people that feel comfortable purchasing and utilizing their guns, the better for them, whereas the rest of us in America also have to worry about the safety that comes along with, adding guns. So, for instance, the gun that's hurting us, it's the people utilizing the gun and when they utilize that gun, and that's why stand your ground is a problem. And so a lot of times we get painted as opponents of, people who are for gun rights, and that is absolutely false. The problem is those who are for gun rights are muddying the subject to make us think that we are attempting to take away your gun rights when we just want to make you more safe.
We've heard, Ahmaud, as you know, because they've been so nationally publicized, the Trayvon Martin and the Jordan Davis cases received a lot of attention. Have there been many other cases? I know Dream Defenders has been examining this in the state of Florida. Are there other cases that we just haven't paid very much attention to?
Oh, absolutely. So there is another young man named Ricardo Sands who was running through the backyards of a neighborhood when the homeowner His name escapes me at the moment, but the homeowner just jumped a fence, chase him down and gun him down and kill him. That was a recent example. But, you know, the thing about staying your ground is it's starting to affect a lot more communities than again, our disproportionate communities of color. So recently in a movie theater in Florida, a gentleman was texting his daughter's school. Another patron began getting angry at that patron texting during the movie. An argument escalated into some popcorn being thrown, and then one gentleman pulled out his gun onto the other gentleman that was texting and shot and killed him. And so I think if these cases are becoming more and more normal, and that is one of the primary effects of this law, is that we're starting to see that it's almost normal. And that is a great injustice that we're dealing with and a reason to keep fighting against such such laws.
Thanks, Gary, very much for the call. Let's go next to Nancy in Hurley. Hi.
Hi. Your guest, he said that that Dunn was better well off. I guess maybe that's not how he said it, but how would he know that?
I think he used the word privileged. Did you not, Ahmad?
Oh, okay. Yeah, absolutely. So what I was speaking in reference to is that, you know, Michael Dunn had no right to tell those youngsters to turn down their music. He had no right to tell them anything. And that's really what I was speaking to, was his privilege, being able to feel that he was in a position to dictate to these four young men exactly how to operate and how to behave, I think, was a concern of privilege. And that is exactly what I was speaking towards. And, you know, the whole condescending tone of being able to operate in that manner, I think, spoke a lot to Michael Dunn's perceived privilege that he had over these young men.
Our number is 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. We're again looking at Florida's Stand Your Ground laws with the verdict, decidedly mixed verdict, and many people are upset about the fact that Michael Dunn was not found guilty of first-degree murder in the death of the young man, Jordan Davis. And he was, of course, found guilty on attempted murder. He will be in prison for a long period of time, and there will be an appeal of the first-degree murder charge. But again, the Stand Your Ground legislation is front and center in this case, as it was in Trayvon Martin, and we're talking about that this hour of the program. Welcome to your thoughts. What do you think? What do you think? What role did Stand Your Ground play in this? Is it an issue of concern to you? 800-486-8655 is our number. Tell us, before we go back to phone calls, please, Ahmad, a little bit more about Dream Defenders. What all are you doing? How you were formed? Some people may not be familiar with your history.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you, Kathleen. Dream Defenders was formed in response to the murder of Trayvon Martin. We decided as a group of friends and kind of old colleagues to come together and run a march for 40 miles from Daytona Beach to Sanford, Florida, the site of the tragic event that led to Trayvon's life being taken. And so once we arrived to Sanford, we had some students engaged in nonviolent civil disobedience, and they blocked the doors of the Sanford Police Department in protest. Zimmerman had not been arrested to that point. After those events, we believed that a more grounded and consistent presence was needed in the state of Florida, and we decided to create the lasting organization, the Dream Defenders. And since then, we have been organizing across the state of Florida on the college campus and in the community in regards to issues such as the school-to-prison pipeline, racial profiling, and stand-your-ground laws, amongst a host of others. Really, we're fighting the criminalization of our generation, the overpopulation and overprivatization of our prisons, and really the pillaging of the resources of our society, and seeking to swiftly change that system into one that leads to progress and education and advancement of all of our people.
And most of the people who are with you who are members of Dream Defenders are young people, would you say, college students, just graduated?
Yeah, well, actually, we would range from an age of about 18 to about 35 right now, and we have hopes and plans to establish a youth program that would bring in middle school and high school students in addition to that. So I think we expect that age range to expand a bit.
Let's go to Jose in Milwaukee next. Hi, Jose.
Yes, good morning, Kathleen and Aman. I have a couple of comments. I believe that, and I'm going to tell you first of all, I am half black. And what happened to George Zimmerman and Trayvon in Florida, I believe that was not okay. But in my situation, I would have also done the same thing. Give me a second. What happened to Michael Dunn, that was instigated. Okay, I also believe.
What did you say that was? I didn't hear what you said.
I believe that what happened with Michael Dunn, that was instigated. He had no reason to go over there and mess with those little kids. Being the fact that they were doing whatever they were doing, he could have just got in his car and left.
Uh-huh.
I also believe that when you're concealing carry license, you should be more educated. I don't believe that 4 hours in a small little classroom telling you how to load a gun and how to unload a gun gives you that experience as to what stand your ground is. I believe it should be more education as to what stand your ground is. I believe people are taking this in their own context, and they're making their own assumptions as to what stand your ground is.
Would you agree, Ahmad?
I would agree with the latter part, essentially you saying that people are defining standing ground upon their own experiences and their own beliefs, and that is part of the problem. But I would also disagree with the earlier comments about, Zimmerman. I think, we would, myself and George Zimmerman probably have nothing in common with regards to that incident that night, and I quite simply do not agree with anything he did that night. So I disagree to the earlier comments, but certainly agree with the latter in the fact that, people are abusing this law that was, supposedly created to make us safer, but I don't believe it was.
Yeah. What kind of education is there to carry a firearm in Florida? Is it extensive or cursory?
Yeah, I believe Jose touched on it. There's minor requirements. People can go to the gun show and basically pick up a weapon with a few hours, and that's been done time and time again. You have these huge gun shows which are, built to profit in a large way, and many people are willing to cut deals. And, from what I've been told, it's just really not the most savory market. And the facts of the matter are, these laws have to help us. If we're going to encourage people to arm themselves, then we have to create a legal code or a application of the law that protects the rest of us that don't want to carry a weapon. A Jordan Davis not carry a weapon. Now, many pro stand your ground proponents may say, well, if Jordan Davis had a gun, he could have stood his ground. But then we would be sitting here with two dead people. And that's not the society we want to promote. What we want to promote is safe and constitutional use of your weapons, but also safety and comfort and peace for the rest of us.
Thanks, Jose, very much for your call. Let's go next to John in Elgin. Hi, John.
Hi, thank you. With everything that's been said since I called in, I want to say I watched both those court cases on TV, and I read about the man shooting in the theater. And in all cases, it seemed like there was antagonism on both sides, but I don't think anything like that warrants taking another person's life. However, I would like to speak to this. The racial profiling, I live in a very integrated area, and the people here are not indigent, but they're not rich. Blue collar, middle of the road. But a lot of the people are bringing that racial profiling on themselves, I believe, with the music, with the way they act, with the way they do respond to adults. And the other man that was on said they were little kids. They weren't little kids. They were teenagers. They know better. And they do sometimes, not them particularly, strike fear into other people. And then when they get a violent reaction, then they don't like it. And I don't think you should have to go around cowering, but I think both people need to learn how to stay away from the confrontation. Then also in that vein, I agree that before they have these stand your ground laws, they need to do a better job of refining them, and they need to protect the people. I would like to speak to some of the statistics real quick, though. He talked about statistics on people successfully in court. I believe he said for people of color, it was like 56%. For white people, it was 76% defending themselves using the that law in Florida. But the statistic I don't hear is, and I am not a gun proponent, I don't own a gun, how many people without guns are being killed by other people that are not using Stand Your Ground, but that have guns illegally or legally, and these other people, these other innocent people, are not able to defend themselves. Nobody is talking about that statistic.
All right, Emma.
Yeah, you touched on a lot there.
Right.
First, I'll say that, with regard to the racial component, I think we have to be very careful here at what we feel like we're tolerating as far as perceived victim blaming. It's one thing if there is an inherent fear that some people may have about a certain type of music or a certain type of culture, but we can't codify that. We can't put law behind saying that, you know what, certain type of music just makes people fearful. And certain culture makes people fearful, and we need to understand that, because 20 years ago it was punk rock, and AC/DC and groups like that people thought were young punks or part of the thug culture, and so there's always going to be a group here that's kind of looked at by the older generation as a bit of a threat, and we can't ever use that as a legal mandate or a legal justification for reaction with violence. So, I think we have to always promote critical thinking with these issues, and we have to encourage our people to be responsible. But I do agree with a lot of what you're saying about people just simply knowing that they need to leave confrontations alone, encourage peacefulness and resourcefulness, and really, personal responsibility and community responsibility. But thank you. You touched on a lot. I'm sorry I couldn't touch on everything. Some of what you said is escaping me at the moment.
Yeah. Thanks very much for the call. There is a real danger in this, because when he says that they weren't kids, they were 17 years old. I've had 17-year-olds in my household in the not too distant past, and they play music a little loudly, in the basement. And sometimes you ask them as parents to please turn that down a little bit. They do in the car. You get in your car and you find that your son or your daughter has it on a different radio station and it's blasting, and you have to turn it down before you back out. There's a real danger in requesting of people, no matter what their age, to change your lifestyle or what your music may be, or you run the risk of getting killed. Don't you think, Ahmad?
Yeah, absolutely. That is the problem for all of us to society consider, that this really, we can talk about the disproportionate racial impact, and we could talk about how it specifically applies to minorities, but in reality, this isn't affecting us all, and this is creating a hostile and unsafe environment for all Americans, from Florida and ranging all across the board in the United States of America today.
More phone calls momentarily. 800-486-8655 is our number. 800-486-8655. We're talking about Stand Your Ground this hour of the program, and actually racial separation, too. This issue brings in many other issues. Ahmad Abuznaid is legal and policy director for Dream Defenders, which is an activist group of minority youth in Florida, and they're rapidly growing. They're dealing with a number of issues. They were formed as a result of Trayvon Martin's death, and they're now working in criminal justice and the numbers of minorities who are disproportionately represented in the criminal justice system. They're going to Geneva to talk about Stand Your Ground laws before the United Nations in a couple weeks. And we're asking your thoughts about Stand Your Ground and, of course, the latest case, which was very much in the news coming out of Florida once again. Michael Dunn, a white man, admitted to shooting into a vehicle with a group of African-American teens inside, including Jordan Davis, who was shot and killed. 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go back to phone calls. Mary is next in Madison. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I've got a little dilemma. You know, the stand your ground, I understand, if your life is being threatened. The problem of it is with that case in Florida with the stand your ground, I was just wondering if the guy that got off anyway, or whatever on it, if he was suffering any post-traumatic stress, because sometimes loud noises like the boom boxes, you know, the boom, boom, it sets off heart defibrillators. I drive transit, and I found this to be very true. People all of a sudden double over in pain. I got to get away from it. You know, common consideration is a thing. But I wonder about post-traumatic stress playing any kind of a part in that whole thing.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't find that was brought up in the trial at all in the Michael Dunn situation. Are you aware of that, Ahmad?
No, I've heard nothing of the sort. What he did say was that he thought he saw a shotgun, and that is where the
right
perceived threat and the subjective nature of stand your ground come into play. Mm-hmm. If we could say that from now on, anytime someone says, I thought I saw mm-hmm. a gun, that we justify the homicide, then we're in for a long, long line of trouble as Floridians and as Americans.
Anybody could say that. Oh, I thought I saw a gun. Thanks, Mary.
Absolutely.
Thanks for the call. Mike in Brookfield. Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to say that, I think one of the comments that the guest made about the fact that at one point in time there was music that was deemed as sort of reprehensible and objectionable. And that was, he pointed out to the punk music, and he used AC/DC as an example. But if you want to go a little bit farther back, you can go to the Clash or something like that. And that there really were actually abuses that occurred of young people at that point in time. I think it's important to remember that when you have the discussion, that you balance the discussion of along a historical perspective, that generally we are becoming more tolerant of other people. And I think in this particular instance, what the guest is doing is really, really important, because the stark difference is that if you went back 30, 40 years, everybody wasn't armed to the teeth. And that's a big change. And that change has occurred as a result of something that I don't know that it was ever intended by the framers of the Constitution, but it certainly has changed. I mean, there are a lot more guns and a lot more people with guns than there ever were, both as a percentage and a raw number.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you very much. That is a great comment and great data to back up really what we're facing here. Thank you. That's a very well thought out comment.
Thanks, Mike. Angie on Facebook wonders, why aren't these stand your ground laws taken to the Supreme Court? They're an affront to the Constitution. Basically, a person with a gun can execute another unarmed person, which Angie says violates Amendments 5, 7, and 8.
That's an interesting concept. I'll have to do a bit of research on that and get back to you all. Thank you.
Okay. I'm sure you'll be on it because you're a legal guy, right? You've been looking.
Absolutely.
Right. Thank you for Angie for the Facebook. And you can leave messages for us on the Kathleen Dunn Show. James in Eau Claire, hi.
How do you do? This is a very good program, very enlightening. I want to make two points. First, a minor point, and then my major point. I'm a Vietnam veteran, decorated, honorably discharged, and I've been a hunter since I was 13 years old. And I will tell you that in that regard, I really look down on these people, like these shooters, because, frankly, I think they're cowards, and they don't know how to handle themselves. And frankly, you ought to have some of us more sensible Vietnam veterans in your organization, because we'll speak out on this. Now, my main point is this. It seems to me, listening to these two cases and some of these other things, particularly as it pertains to the South, and I'm descended from three Union Army Civil War veterans, that You know, this seems to me like the last gasp of the segregationists. You know, I mean, I wouldn't be at all surprised if there's like some closet Ku Klux Klan people involved in this business. And I think maybe, I know you can't come out bluntly and say that or people think you are crazy, but you might want to look into this because, quite frankly, this is nuts. And that's from a Yankee, if you don't mind. I will listen.
All right. Thanks, James.
Wow. Thank you very much for the comment. I don't have much to add, but I think you said a lot right there. Thank you.
Have you thought about expanding your membership to include older people, veterans?
Hey, we would love that. We actually have no maximum age. We've just only reached up to 35 so far. So for any of those interested, please, there is a place for you within the Dream Defenders. Dreamdefenders.org, you can reach out to us or any of our social media handles, and we'll get back to you.
Thank you, James, for your call. John in Milwaukee, hi.
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 Yeah, I just had a comment. Hi. I just had a comment about the origins of the law itself. I mean, we've had self-defense forever in this country for 200 plus years in common law, and I'm wondering why. I know has the constitutionality of Stand Your Ground been tested? Because especially, you know, with someone just commented about, you know, the various amendments of the Bill of Rights that obviously it violates. Especially if someone, you know, back 20 years ago, I was an MP, and we talked about deadly force, and it applied to the general public as well. You can't use deadly force unless certain circumstances are met, and there's nothing even close to that in either the Trayvon Martin case or this other case in Florida. I mean, thank God we don't have anything close to that in Wisconsin. We don't even have the death penalty. It's funny how the South, you know, the states that are hanging on to the death penalty. And I'm wondering, you know, back in the 60s, if you had Stand Your Ground in Mississippi, there'd certainly be a lot of dead rednecks walking around, or not walking around, I should say. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Comment, Ahmad?
Definitely appreciate the feedback. Thank you.
Randy in Key Wascom, hi.
Hello, thank you for taking my call. The thing is, the Ross case sounds like the guy was completely in the wrong, but you keep calling the Zimmerman-Martin case a Stand Your Ground case. That was a case of self-defense because when he was shot, Trayvon Martin was on top of George Zimmerman. He had knocked him down. That's a completely different. At that point, it's real easy to say he was afraid for his life because he was attacked by Trayvon Martin. Should he have been following him? No. But that did not give Martin the right to attack him. And unfortunately, he died because he attacked Zimmerman, knocked him down, and there was an injury to the back of his head. He claimed that he pounded his head on the concrete, and the evidence showed that. So that's what happened there. So that's a totally different case from this last case. And to keep calling it a Stand Your Ground case, it's not. It's a self-defense case.
Well, there were completely different points of view in what happened in the Trayvon Martin situation. Would you say that that clearly was not a Stand Your Ground case, Ahmad?
No, actually, I would disagree respectfully. Again, if we think about what the law was prior to 2005, George Zimmerman would have had a duty to safely retreat. And so if we never would have allowed him to go forward with that confrontation in the first place, then obviously we would have had no confrontation. And secondly, the jury actually came out and said that they were confused due to the jury instructions, which included Stand Your Ground, because if you look at Florida law, Stand Your Ground is inseparable from self-defense now. It is a full-fledged part of self-defense in Florida. So any time, really, you're looking at a self-defense case, you know, it is extremely easy to find the connection between that and Stand Your Ground.
Jim is next in Mount Horeb. Hi.
Hello.
Hi, Jim. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. This is the Kathleen Dunshaw?
Yes, Jim. Go ahead, please.
Ah, slight delay.
Yeah, I wanted to sort of reframe the issue at hand, and in terms of putting race aside, in the north, in the more rural areas, race is not so much an issue. But I wanted to reframe it in terms of the substituting a person's age, namely teenage and young adult, notoriously rebellious age, and socioeconomic status. It's my impression that combination of those two could just as easily count for who is the victim in these uses of stand your ground and other, you know, kind of unbalanced confrontations. And I'd be interested if there are any statistics on that. So that's my question.
All right. Thanks for the call.
So I'm sorry, Kathleen. It was extremely hard to
hear. I know.
It
was. Was it more than an issue of race? Could you take in socioeconomic factors in looking at this particular case and others? Are we placing too much emphasis on race?
I can't say that we place too much emphasis on race. I wouldn't say that. But socioeconomic factors certainly are right there. And we realize that in this country, if you are poor and white, then your ability to succeed is that much more difficult than if you were, you know, a well-off or a wealthy white person. And so we understand that a lot of the effects that people of color, you know, experience in these systems are white brothers and sisters who are simply socioeconomically challenged are feeling the same pains.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Jim, so much for your call. Time for maybe one or two more calls. David in Muscadet, hi.
Hi. We have to stop killing each other regardless of color or creed. That's number one. Number two is whatever happened to it takes a village to raise a child. I ought to be able to say that that's not appropriate behavior, whether I'm talking to an adult or a child, and say, you know what, you're stepping on my life because your kid's having a tantrum in a restaurant. Or if they're playing the music too loud. That's all I got.
Okay.
Hey, thank you. We definitely have to stop killing each other, but I would reason that if you have a right to tell me to turn my music down, I also have a right to tell you that I don't want to listen, and that's why this is America.
Let's go to Michael next in Florida. Hi, Michael. Michael?
This is me.
Yeah, go ahead, Michael.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know if I was going to get on the radio.
Yeah, we're almost out of time.
The only thing I had to say was that, you know, everybody's focusing on the incidents that are taking place after the fact, and they're against this law. But none of the people are debating or talking about why the law was enacted in Florida. The gentleman just said he has a right as an American citizen not to turn his music down. But don't I have a right as an American citizen to be wherever I am and not be beaten, not have my property stolen, not be threatened? You know, this is why the law was enacted, because there was a gap there where people could not be safe. I mean, Florida is a virtual playground for thuggery, if any of you guys have any idea about that. That's all I've got to say.
That sounds like you got a state where nobody's very safe. We'll have to leave it at that. We're out of time. But I want to thank you very much, Ahmad, for being with us. We'll be in touch with you after you go to the United Nations, after you go to Geneva. It should be a very interesting trip. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, and thank you to the interactive fans that reached out today.
Yeah, we had a lot of calls. Thank you, Ahmad. Ahmad Abuznaid, our guest this hour. He is a legal and policy director for Dream Defenders, a group of young minority youth who are being recognized as the next generation of civil rights leaders. Thanks to K.P. Whaley for producing this show, and thanks to K.P. Whaley for on-air production here in our studios. And thanks for all of your calls, everybody. We'll return.